Stop doom scrolling, Ian. Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, January 26th, 2021. Alongside Ian Ferguson, I'm your party host, Pat Contry. This is the podcast for gaming news, retro game stuff, pop culture, some movie stuff, Zack Snyder, everything. On the show today, we'll be talking about DuckTales prototype ROM found and released, Polymega update, Microsoft raising some prices and pissing off people, the Magic Engine, maybe some voicemails as well. Ian, how
Mega Engine.
Oh, I said the Magic Engine?
Yeah,
oh.
Magic Engine's the emulator.
I know, Ian. That's why I said it. It almost says Mega Engine on here. Ian, how was your weekend?
It was good. I worked. I made...
Made monies?
I made monies. What else did I do? Started making some ramen. That was good. It's delicious.
Ramen.
It's tough on Tuesdays to think about what I did over the weekend. It's always such a blur. I have nothing particularly interesting to say. Started playing that.
That's good, being that you're on a podcast, to admit that. That's a good strategy.
As I get older, I have less interesting things to say. I started playing that new, the heck is it called, Cyber Shadow game last night.
Ninjas!
Ninjas. Came out today, technically.
Eight/16-bit style ninja games are all the rage. The Messenger, we got this one.
Music's really good so far. It's definitely difficult. The graphics are nice. I'm enjoying it. I don't know. It literally became available to me at midnight this morning. I am not special. I didn't have like a review code for it or anything. But yeah, I'm enjoying it.
I didn't know about the game until yesterday, until I saw the post about it. I'm like, oh, this looks interesting. Messenger I knew about, you know, 6, 7, 8 months before. But for some reason, this game flew under my ninja radar.
Well, this is it's being published by Yacht Club, who did Shovel Knight, but it's made by, it's not made by them. It's not developed in-house. It's made by Machine Head, I think was the name of the company. So
I think it's a small team.
Yeah.
I saw one post saying it was one person.
It very well could be.
So that's, hey, get the Yacht Club publishing money behind you, marketing push. That's only good stuff right there. This weekend, I got a haircut. So now the stay-at-home order has been raised in California. So I didn't realize on Friday when I got my haircut, or Thursday or Friday, when I'm not going to throw my hairdresser on the bus and get him in trouble, but they shouldn't have been open. no hair salon is supposed to be open. But I called and got an appointment, and I pull up, and it says, like, oh, we're closed. And I'm like, what? So it's like a speakeasy. I got my hair cut. There was like no one else in there. So like there's still hair salons are staying open, I think, by doing this like under the table and secret stuff. Because someone emailed me and got that air cut thing. I remember I mentioned that a week or two ago.
Sorry, I need to fix this. The studio that released Cyber Shadow was Mechanical Head.
Okay.
Continue.
My hair story must move on. So someone emailed me because I remember it brought up the air cut thing where it was like kind of like
the Flowbee,
but not a Flowbee because it's not attached to the vacuum, but it still sucks it in. So in theory, the same sort of mechanism.
Yeah.
They said it takes like 2 hours to cut your hair using that. Like it's so weak. Like it's for like really short hair. So I looked at that. Plus the fact that it's like $150. Plus the fact that it's out of stock. I'm like, I'm not doing that. I would try the Flowbee, but the Flowbees have been all out of stock everywhere ever since fucking Clooney, you know, reinvigorated the franchise that's been dead for, you know, 25, 30 years. And so Flowbee stocks is up if Flowbee has a stock. But yeah, so I got a real haircut and it's not bad. And she didn't touch my freaking eyebrows. She didn't
that's
go
good.
Near them. Because now if she makes even one solitary move towards, I'll slap the fucking scissors out of her hands if that happens again. But no, she did a good job. Did a good job. And I also watched Narcos Mexico on Netflix. I need a new series to watch. And I didn't see the original Narcos, but Narcos Mexico is a spinoff. Now, I think it's a second spinoff, but really good. Really good. Diego Luna is the star. He's the kingpin. And it's all based on real people and true story stuff, which, again, makes it more riveting that this shit actually happened. And Michael Pena is in it as a DEA agent. And I'm like halfway through the second season of it. It's a fantastic show. If you like Mexican, if you like Mexican women, especially, this is a show for you. I know you might like that. There's tons of beautiful women, like every episode is. You're like, what? But no, it's gripping. It's very violent, obviously, because it deals with, you know, the drug kingpins and a lot of meetings, a lot of like face to face meetings. And this, like, half it's like you got to fly to meet someone because you can't trust phones, and half it's meetings, sitting down, and it's like the negotiations back and forth and who's playing who. So it's really fascinating. But it's all based on true stories and true people. It's like, because I cut back into, there's a semi-narrator, so you cut back into the real footage of the events, which like throws you off. You see like the real guy after you saw the guy playing him, so it's like kind of throws you off.
So it's a mixture of reenactment and
No. Every once in a while, the narrator will just pipe in some extra information and show like the news clip footage.
Okay, gotcha.
But it's still a, you know, a drama.
Okay.
So this throws you off. Every like 15, 20 minutes, they'll show like a quick like 20-second clip of him. He'll say something. You'll see the real guy. But it's interesting. That's the start of the DEA. I think it starts in like 84, the series. And so at that point, the DEA was like a joke. No one knew what they did. So it's like they start off with like three guys in Mexico, basically, like with like no resources at all, trying to like pin down what was happening in Mexico with the consolidation of the first time they consolidated and made a cartel, basically.
Gotcha.
And it started with the marijuana before they moved on to cocaine, work with Colombia after that. So it's very interesting. Diego Luna's fantastic. I haven't seen him in a lot of stuff besides Rogue One, but a fantastic actor. That's what I did. Ian, you think we should play games and cars?
No. So there's a... article on
me and my car,
the Spectrum, talking about video games and cars, something that Elon Musk likes to talk about fairly regularly. Cars are
a child.
Yeah, he's a fucking I can't stand that dude. He is a literal kid. He has the
silver spoon, born with a silver spoon and child. Anyway, go on.
The shit he says is like listening to a 15-year-old who thinks they're very smart. So cars are getting more advanced, more high tech, full of screens and stuff like that. And of course, it just seems like eventually people are going to start putting video games or whatever on those center touch screens. So there's like three main types of games that they discuss. They discuss, you know, ones that use the center console touch screen, things like solitaire,
sure,
backgammon. You know, you're parked or whatever. Yeah. You're in traffic.
You're charging your car up.
Yeah, charging your car up.
So it makes sense.
I can almost see that kind of
thing. I'm sure that'll like shut off while you're driving, like,
yeah,
automatically.
It
like
better. That'll it should. And then they talk about games that utilize some aspect of the actual car itself as controls. So like a racing game where you actually use your car's steering wheel.
Yeah.
Now they're talking about that being done, of course, again, when the car is shut off.
Yes, you would think that you're not driving and playing the racing game at the same time. That would be insane.
Neutral park. Okay. All right. But then there's a third kind that they talk about that have not yet been implemented, but people want to toy around with. And this, to me, sounds like a horrible idea. Augmented reality and other games that could be integrated into the active driving experience.
Oh, yeah. That sounds safe.
No.
Let's drive over coins in the road for bonus points.
Exactly.
Are you fucking crazy?
Hit the boost pad.
Are you crazy?
You absolutely out of your mind.
Is that even a semi-serious consideration? I think it's problematic at all in terms of muscle memory and sort of cognitive, you know, training, that you should not use a steering wheel in your car for any game at all.
No.
Because that might screw you up even a little bit when you're actually driving. Not mapping the one-to-one motion the same. You know, you're driving like this and turning the wheel, like, we'll say 7 degrees, you know by muscle memory what it does in a car.
Yep.
Versus a fucking video game using the same life or death peripheral now for a toy, for a game, basically a game. No, that's some cognitive science shit that I won't even get into, probably. That's a no-no.
You don't want to forget how your steering wheel handles on an actual road.
Or even if it alters it just a little bit. No, that's life and death stuff.
Yep.
And don't say, well, Pat, we have steering wheel controllers. Yes, in your house. And they're different than the one you use in your car. And you're not sitting the same exact way you're driving your car playing the game. Like, that's a no-no to me. That is craziness. To even have that. You're gonna play like Need for Speed in your Tesla. Then okay, we're gonna go out for a ride afterwards. After I played it for no, ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean they mentioned that in the article. They do a good job of pointing that out too. You know, they talk about how, you know, this may seem like a moot point, so they're talking about playing the games while the car is parked. But the same controls previously dedicated to the licensed operation of a car are now also used for consequence-free light entertainment.
Yeah, no.
No, you want to keep the consequences attached to your car.
Let's not have a fucking a bulldozer with a game inside where you can play the bulldozer and then have someone use it afterwards. Or a crane, you know. Right. Like, this is heavy machinery that kills tens of. What is it? How many people died by driving last year? 38,800 people in 2000. 38,800 people. Holy shit! I don't think it was that much. I knew it was 10,000. Yeah. Let's not make it worse. Let's not make that worse.
So this points this out too. Tesla Arcade does lock out some driving controls when playing a game. Pressing the accelerator, for example, produces a warning notice. But turning the steering wheel to control a game car still also turns the wheels of the real car.
Why would you want to do that when you're parked?
It is easy to imagine a scenario where somebody parks their car with the wheels aligned straight ahead, then becomes immersed in a racing game while their partner runs an errand. Yeah.
It doesn't like somehow disconnect the wheels to your...
No.
To the steering... Like, no. What? What?
It still moves them.
Oh, this is the worst idea ever. This is the idea where you just like throw the person out of the company when they bring it to you. Like, what? How does this benefit us at all? Anyone doing this? That's insane. That was a fun ride.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Woo.
Yeah.
Get us to the automatic cars. Come on. Get us to Total Recall. Come on. We're past due. Here. Class action lawsuit against Nintendo for the Switch Joy-Con issue. But this time it's in Canada. I'm not sure there's a lot to say about this. But, you know, there's still issues in the U.S. with this. Class action lawsuit. Nintendo's trying to make it right. They'll fix your shit for free, but they'll end the class action lawsuit by sending us all a coupon at some point. I'm sure. Did I miss that already? Did it happen? Did we send a coupon?
No.
We weren't sent like a $5 coupon. It'll happen. That's how this shit's gonna end with Nintendo.
$5 off a brand new game.
Well, they did that. Yeah, they did that back in, was that 89 or 90? They did that.
Yep.
91, whatever that was. Oh, we did some monopolistic practices. Here's a $5 coupon to buy another one of our games. That on our console. Okay. Nintendo's like, we don't care.
Send me a pizza.
Send you a pizza?
Yeah.
Did you ever get that Ninja Turtle pizza with the coupon?
No.
I think my friend might have done that.
Did you ever do the Bucket Club thing, though, and get your personal pan pizzas that way?
What's Bucket Club?
Don't remember Bucket?
No.
Bucket was, and they still do it, in high middle schools, grade schools, essentially, it was the read books and write book reports, and then your teacher can give you the coupons for free personal pan pizzas.
No. I went to Catholic school. We didn't have that.
I did too.
Bribery. No, I did. We did not have bribery through pizza to get us to read.
Man,
it was like read or else. So they didn't. We had the nuns didn't slap our knuckles with like rulers like what happened with my father like in the '50s. That didn't happen. They were mean. They were still like the old guard. If we're talking like late '80s, you still had the original old guard, like hardcore nuns that taught like four or five classes. Yes.
They're very cold people.
They're the opposite of warmth, except for
the opposite of warmth.
Except for the principal, who was actually the nicest one. So that was good. She was very nice. And when I got suspended for fighting in eighth grade, I think I told the story. She was actually trying to be friendly about it in a way.
Who was the nun in The Sound of Music?
I never saw The Sound of Music before.
She was nice.
She was nice. There's nice nuns out there. There have to be. They're like, you know, they're out there, you know, feeding the poor and helping out the lepers and stuff all over and historically, you know. They're doing that stuff. I heard Mother Teresa she was not nice though. That's what we're about. Personally, that she was hardcore. She got shit like she's like fucking. We're gonna do it my way.
I mean, I'll say it right now in this intro. Fuck Mother Teresa. She was awful. She was not a good person.
She's not a good. Wow, Saint Mother Teresa is not a good person. Really?
Mm-mm.
Even though she got shit done,
she constantly was like denying medication, pain relief, things like that because she thought it brought you closer to God.
Well, good thing she didn't teach me mathematics in fourth grade. Good thing, because those are the type of people. She's a saint, right? They made her a saint.
They did.
So for to be a saint, you need at least two verified miracles that happen through
your name. They really
are they loosened that up in the past 100 years?
They ran sainthood through for her. Yeah,
they made up a couple miracles.
Like, they fast
the Pope. The Pope just rubber stamped the miracle. Okay, I know it's kind of BS, but okay, let's get her through.
They fast tracked Mother Teresa.
How many saints are happening in modern times? What to be a saint nowadays? Do you like pray through social media and something happens? Like,
why am I Googling Nun House?
Nun House, what?
Sound of Music. I'm trying to find the name of
I'm
the nun.
I'm more curious about the modern day saints. Like
Maria.
Who's gonna, like, how are you going to be a saint in 2015? What do you got to do to be a saint, like, nowadays?
I have no clue.
Like, back in the day, it was like you took care of poor people, you know what I mean? And then somehow someone got cured by blindness by praying to you somehow. I'm just curious going forward in this ultra-modern tech.
Make a good brown butter blondie or something like that.
Yeah, like what's the miracle that's going to happen?
I don't know.
Oh my god, my shrimp's going bad, and you pray to someone, and then the shrimp is all of a sudden cookable again. Like, you know, I'm not trying to make light of it. I just think it's funny that that's the process of becoming a saint. Remember, Catholics are the only crazy people that have saints. So, we also believe that, you know.
I was a Catholic.
Well, you always are. It's kind of
technically,
it's like,
yeah.
It's like the mob. You're never totally out of being a Catholic. It's like the mob.
I can't scrub it off my skin. Yeah,
yeah, they can pull you back in. Like, you get married, you're going to be married in a Catholic church potentially. That's how they pull you back in. They get you back in there.
I hear Latin and I start to weep a little bit. I have to cross myself.
Hallelujah. This is a weird intro, but we had the organist that would do the Saturday night. It was a Saturday night mass, the 7 p.m. mass on Saturday, which was like the hardcore mass because it counted for Sunday. But then he had to deal with the guy with the really weird singing voice. The Catholics cannot sing. I'll just say that. We cannot sing compared to the other, you know, Southern Baptist, Presbyterian, whatever. We can't sing. He would go, "Alleluia, alleluia." That voice will be in my head forever for Saturday night mass. That's a rough one, Saturday night mass. Get home, you watch America's Most Wanted, though, right afterwards. And cops.
Can always
Fox.
Tell which dads are cheating on their wives because they sing the loudest with their booming centers.
Wow, okay. I didn't think about that when I was seven, but okay. I didn't cross my mind. All right. What are we doing here?
Church.
You know what crosses my mind, Ian? Going to ultimatenintendo.com. You knew it was coming. You can get enamel pins, RBI baseball stickers.
All right.
You get certain NES guidebooks, Super Nintendo guidebooks. Not for resale documentary. Speaking of that, Ian, shout out to Jonathan Luong, I think I pronounced his name right, who does really in-depth book reviews of guidebooks, and he did a 40-minute-plus review of the four Super Nintendo books on the market. Jonathan Luong. So search for which Super Nintendo book is the best on here. Compares four Super Nintendo books, and I'm not just plugging it because a certain SNES guidebook got the highest rating out of them, but
you are.
Yeah, partially.
You are.
But no, it's a very in-depth review, and he like even uses like spreadsheets to say, well, this is the number of games on this, and these are the ones that cross over. These are the regional differences. Like, it's really, I mean, in-depth. This is it. And he goes over the average words per book per review, and of course, sorry, Super Nintendo guidebook is the top. It's like 400 words on average. I wish he spent more time looking at the actual quality of the writing, but I'm not going to parse it there. It would be interesting, though, if he looked into which books paid their writers. That'd be a good one to look into, and gave their writers complimentary copies of the book. That'd be a good one. We'll see which one stacked up there. But no, check it out. It's a really good review of the review books, meta reviews, and the best artwork. And my pal Yoshi did the artwork there, so Yoshi was happy to hear that of all four books. All right, what else is going on, Ian? Oh, I'm gonna be on Twitch Wednesday night before poker, my biweekly poker game online. I lost like I felt it the last time. Not happy about that. I did not play horribly. It was just a bad run. Cameo.com/PatContry if you want a cameo. But my Twitch is twitch.tv/ContryCode. So 80s commercials. This will be like the 39th or 40th week in a row I've done it.
Jeez.
Hey, people like it. People like it.
That is some stuff.
Speaking of Twitch, there's a piece of garbage on Twitch that got found out because he yelled at his baby during a live broadcast, and they called Child Protective Services. And not much to say. It's horrifying. But now every other week you have someone on Twitch being found out for bullshit. Some of these people get thrown off Twitch. That one piece of shit that like spit vodka into her cat's mouth is somehow still on Twitch. that fucking piece of garbage somehow.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which leads people to say, was there a double standard? I'm more willing to go with you when that shit happens, that there's a double standard when it comes to some of this, people who get thrown off and who doesn't. But I wish we brought this up before. I wish these influencers, I don't know how many followers this person has, hopefully not a lot, but I wish like you had to get like a license to do this shit and then make sure you weren't a fucking psychopath before you did this shit that people could see. You know? I'm not sure what system we can work out with that. But no, I will not be yelling at any babies on mine. I'll be yelling at how many hamburger and cereal commercials I see within a 20-minute span. That's what I yell out on mine. But yeah.
Who is this? Buckers is the name of the guy who's screaming at his baby. At BUCKKERZ.
Just garbage.
Yep.
Speaking of streamers, our pal Ninja, I didn't put it down, our pal Ninja did an interview, and they asked him about the refusing to play a game with a woman, which I think he backtracked on.
No, he didn't.
He didn't?
Really,
he doubled down?
He didn't really backtrack on anything.
Because I know he has since then in a group.
I love you. I don't want to talk about Ninja today.
Okay.
I don't want to talk about Ninja today. Or maybe ever again.
Oh, he said he loved me. That's the first time ever. It took me an exasperated over Ninja to admit that.
Yeah.
A plea for help is when he admits his love. A plea for help.
I can't deal with fucking Tyler Blevins anymore.
Well, he did say, the one thing he said, basically he took the Charles Barkley, I'm not a role model stance, which is bullshit when you're spending more time with these kids than the parents are spending with them overall. Like, think about it. You're spending more quality time with the kids watching you. You got to watch what the fuck you say and do. That's all I'm going to say when you're like that. At least when your audience you know is children. Or teenagers. All right. You want to talk about some prototype stuff?
Yeah, prototype stuff. Zelda 64.
Yay!
Yeah! Zelda 64 prototype has been found. Pre-release version includes areas and stuff that were never in the final game, including, I think, some of the movement test levels. That's what I was looking for. But it was a prototype N64 cartridge of F-Zero that contained data from an early build of Zelda 64 as well. They're thinking that it was Space World 1997 or so.
Half of the ROM, they said, was found. About half of the original Ocarina of Time ROM. So I guess the other half might have been erased by F-Zero, maybe.
That I do not know. Yeah. I whatever it is, it's cool. It's always good to see... any earlier version or build of a game pop up. I am not the biggest Ocarina of Time fan, so I don't, you know, taking a quick look at this sort of stuff, I don't know any of the major differences or anything like that.
I am not. I was tempted to review it for the book, being that I've never played through it before. I think I played it for like an hour once at my cousin's, and I really have to play this game at some point. So another person's taking that for the book. That's interesting.
Yeah, it says there's a couple of items in that didn't make it to the end, including something called the Lens of Truth and Spiritual Stones, and a soul medallion that would allow players to turn into the fairy Navi and fly around the environment, which would have been...
That's interesting.
Yeah, kind of neat.
Kind of like how you turned into it in Zelda 2 and flew around the town and stuff.
Yeah, you have to... You can fly through the keyholes. That's what I always use.
Or the chimney, up in the chimney. Uh-huh. I almost forgot about that in Zelda 2. That was interesting.
And then a DuckTales prototype ROM was also found recently and published by Cutting Room Floor.
Ian's dream.
It's from February 5th, 1989, and they think it might be one of the first times... the U.S. teams, the U.S. Capcom team had seen the game in action. So I have not had a chance to go through it and play it yet, but some of the differences that are detailed are the point values for all of the...
That's a difference. The note goes down.
The point values for all the items are different. Red diamonds aren't implemented yet. There is some differences in the title screen music, like Pat just played. The moon theme is a little bit slower.
Two are entirely different, according to this. It says Transylvania's theme is completely different.
Transylvania is completely different. Moon theme is slower.
I'll play that real quick, Transylvania, to start it. Oh, I actually like that.
It's thematically similar. It still has like the reverb and the echo on the notes and whatnot. But yeah, it's a totally different
song. Like that ghosty sound.
Yeah. So
the moon is different. I'll just play the moon real quick because that's like an iconic
yeah
sort of thing. So the cadence is different. It's not filled as much.
Yep. It's a little slower. And then apparently the melody is more complex.
It's a first draft. It still has the basic, it's the same melody, but yeah, it's
I like it. It's got a nice little, it's got a little,
it's more somber.
It's got a little bounce to it. I think it's got a little bounce to it.
It's less complex.
And then there's all sorts of like text changes. Basically, the text isn't finalized in the game when you run into Huey, Dewey, Louie, Webby, etc. So
Huey has been captured instead of kidnapped. Okay.
I brought you a present, King of Terra Firmix. Here's a gift for you, oh King of Terra Firmix. Yeah, so things changed, but it's neat.
Simplified text. Yeah. You got to play this one, Ian. You got to do your speed run,
yeah,
on this version and see how it stacks up. So, oh, that's here we are.
Yeah, it looks like there might be other differences too that they haven't quite documented yet. The cutscene going back to Duckburg, and it looks like there might be some level differences, but they haven't quite fleshed all that out yet.
Would this be the one prototype that you'd want to own if you could own it?
DuckTales prototype would be cool. Yeah.
So this is the one where it would get you like, all right, I'd put that on my shelf and get it slabbed or put it in a case and.
I would totally grade it and then take it straight to
straight to Heritage.
Heritage Dog.
Yeah. Sell it. I'm not saying you're gonna flip it. You want it to flip it?
No, I wouldn't be able to help myself.
That's what a true game preservationist does. They get the prototype, they ask for it, they get them sent to them, and they don't dump them and they throw them on eBay undumped. That's a true preservationist.
That fucking sham. All right, moving on.
We love talking about Blizzard on the podcast here, right? Don't we?
Yes. So, Vicarious Visions. This is a sad one, and this is something that you see more and more. Vicarious Visions, the team that did the Crash Insane trilogy, and more importantly, did the excellent remaster of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2. Obviously, they were under Activision already at that point, but they were doing their own thing and they were doing it quite well. They received a lot of positive buzz, especially after Tony Hawk 1 and 2 came out. They've been acquired by Blizzard, I should say absorbed by Blizzard, and will be working solely on Blizzard properties, which sucks. Kind of have this team and then give them the task of refreshing one of the most popular video game franchises of the past, I would say, 2-3 decades in Tony Hawk. And they do it, and they do it successfully, and their reward is not to continue working on the series that they fixed or to even make their own games, but to quietly be absorbed into nothingness and to work on Blizzard properties for the rest of time.
Well, we don't know it's the rest of time. I mean, but for the foreseeable future.
Of course, I'm being a little exaggerated.
They're probably like, okay, we got the bullpen here that we got to throw them at something. Well, they're redoing Diablo 2, right? They're trying to remaster that. They'll throw them at that.
Guaranteed. The rumor is that they're going to be put on the Diablo 2 remake, which is, I mean, in one way, great. I am sure it will actually turn out very well then if they do it, but it's still sad to see this team's skill squandered on something like another remake when they could have, like I said, at least taken this franchise, they could have kept taking it into the future.
I see it more like how Hollywood studios have become, where there's less and less, we'll just say, medium-sized properties being done. Either it's a really small thing or it's a fucking gigantic property that we were going to work on. And in this case, so like there's no room for even a smaller, quote-unquote smaller thing like Tony Hawk. That's fine, you did that, but a real moneymaker is going to be World of Warcraft or Overwatch. Like, those are our main properties, so let's throw you at that. Which, I mean, from a business stance, that makes sense. It's just shit to have less and less of those other games that you like.
Yeah,
out there.
And I mean, the lot of things about it are shitty, but we have, you know, this excellent relaunch of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater series, and it's definitely, there's definitely going to be another Tony Hawk game after how successful this was.
Sure.
And who knows if it's going to be any good. It's going to go from one team directly to another team. They're going to start, I mean, who knows how much from the ground up they're going to have to start, but yeah, I mean, Tony Hawk fans got a brief moment of something good.
Yeah. Well, we'll see in a few years. Maybe we'll get a sequel in like 3-4 years on that. You know, but at least that was a success, right?
Yeah.
Can they remake 3? Or no, is that
working? They didn't throw the levels for 3 in, but the mechanics from 3 are already in there. So I don't think they would necessarily remake 3.
Maybe give you a DLC pack?
I was going to say maybe we'll see a DLC pack with Tony Hawk 3 levels.
All right, well, we'll see what happens there. Maybe they can work on Diablo Immortal 2.
Diablo right. Immortal 2?
As well, meaning as well.
Oh, as well.
T-O-O, Ian.
T-O-O.
That was a whole lesson in grammar that our nuns taught us in first grade.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
All right, Ian, we love talking about the soon-to-be-released, question mark, modular emulator-based retro console known as the Polymega. And Ian texts me like 11 o'clock last night, which he never texts me that late.
10:36, I contemplated it. I was like, make it so.
And, okay, John Luke. But he texted me some news, so an update. Where's my update button?
Update
on Polymega. Not the best news for Polymega. That their relationship with retailer Walmart is falling apart. Apparently.
Yeah. So on their Instagram story, they posted a story. It starts off very weird. It starts off telling you that you can buy controllers. They have
buy controllers for the console that's not out yet. Okay. But buy the controllers. Okay.
They have controllers in stock. Then it jumps to another picture telling you that if you have pre-ordered your Polymega through Walmart, you need to cancel your order and reorder through them. And you can use the discount code Walmart50 for up to 60 days to receive a $50 discount on your order from Polymega.
So right now, the base unit on Walmart.com, you can still pre-order for $400 with free shipping, and it's supposed to ship, according to this site, on March 31st, it's supposed to ship. But now they're saying that ain't happening. Or something's up here.
So this is what it says on the... So, and then if you go to the Polymega site, the base unit is now $449 with the controller.
So it'll be the same at Walmart, but after the $50 off, it'll be $400. Plus, I guess, shipping. I don't know.
Which is its own thing,
mind
you.
Weird, but okay. Because Walmart's taking a cut on their marketplace, obviously.
I'm just saying that's worth mentioning alone, that the price has jumped up yet again. I don't know when that happened. Maybe that happened a while ago, but the price has jumped up yet again to $450.
Like, it must be a thing when you're making a new console, like another one, that you jump the price up 50%, because this started at $300 when these pre-orders were May of 2019. It was $300 for the base unit. Now it's be $450. Holy God.
Wild.
It's wild stuff.
I mean, this is a long wall of text, but basically it says that Walmart.com went through a personnel change sometime in Q3 to Q4 of last year.
Spelled personnel wrong.
Since then, they have stopped responding to Polymega's emails and phone calls, despite repeated attempts to get in contact with them regarding fulfillment of the North American pre-orders. We gave our 5+ contacts at Walmart.com and their distributor Solutions to go ample time to respond. Mm-hmm. By the way, I'm adding in words that they left out.
They already misspelled personnel. Can you get a fucking Grammarly plugin before you do your press releases?
Ample time to respond and rectify the situation over several attempts to contact, but they have left us with no response, despite even threats of legal action due to the significant issues this has caused us all. Then they go on to talk about how they're taking it back into their own hands. And that you should let your friends know to cancel the pre-order through Walmart. Just a mess.
We will provide a precise timeline once we know how many are ordered, but they will likely be fulfilled in April to May of 2021, given the ballpark numbers we did get before Walmart went dark on us. And I talk about the code. We will begin shipping 2018 and 19 pre-orders. Wow, they started in 18? Okay. Okay, so they started in 18, so it's been almost 3 years. They're going to do that, they said, late February for those who previously ordered on polymega.com. So the good news is that, in theory, these will start shipping in a month if you pre-ordered them years ago. For 2018-19, that doesn't count, I guess, 20
right.
and 21. But for Walmart, they don't know who you are right now, apparently, and it's going to take some months to figure that out.
They're not going to. They're in the dark on that. So
This is horrifying. This puts in the question, what is this, what's actually happening? If not, Walmart's not going to be pleased when they find this out. But hey, one of the people selling on our site and we're doing pre-orders for, they just fucking threw us under the bus, potentially. So they better be right here. You don't want to upset a huge company like that. They got leagues of lawyers, first of all, but they will never do business with you again, potentially, after this sort of PR stuff.
Yeah.
Like, no. Why is the timing now? Why is the time, like, why are they saying it now, I wonder. And how tenuous is it selling through a retailer like Walmart if potentially, allegedly, what it takes to torpedo your plans is someone changing their job? How does that, like, the whole process get thrown out?
Right. How does someone changing their job change the fact that they were supposed to be...
I don't understand that.
Pre-orders. That seems like something that it would be.
There's no one else in the company you get in touch with. No rep that. I guess that's what they're alleging, that we can't get in touch with. That rep's gone. We can't get in touch with anyone else.
Yeah. I don't think this will be good for them. I think they're going to lose. I don't know what the number of pre-orders they had through Walmart is, but I have a feeling they're going to lose a lot of that. I honestly think that step of canceling, I think a lot of people are going to cancel and then just not.
How many people are aware of this information that's coming out? I mean, right. It's making some websites, but they posted on a Facebook. They posted on a Instagram story, which appears at the top when you click on the
and
icon.
It's not even in the feed. It's not even in the first picture in the Instagram.
So if I'm on my computer, I don't see it unless I click on the little icon in the feed. If you're not into Instagram, if you're not on the gram, it's not on their Facebook page because I checked this morning, but they posted yesterday in their Facebook page. They posted about good news. The Power NES module supports a Famicom adapter card, so we can just read the ROMs. Like that's literally what they posted yesterday. But I did not see them post. This is probably a little more important.
Yeah, I would think
to communicate. Nothing on their Twitter. There hasn't been anything on their Twitter in months. Nothing on their Twitter. So this is bad PR. It's just bad PR. I'm not sure we were supposed to know this information to begin with. I don't, like, in this release, they talk about, like, what the hell is, like, what, they're just, I don't care about who the Walmart distributor is or who you went through, Solutions to Go. Like, why do I need to hear about that? Figure it out. I mean, figure it out. That's what it comes down to. Like, we brought this up before about they over-communicate about this shit. It makes them look like they don't know what they're doing. This may very well not be their fault. But after this is the third or fourth time where you throw other companies under the bus
have not been good about communicating in the past. So this very well could be Walmart's fault. As a matter of fact, I'm sure maybe there is some truth to that, but it just doesn't look good. And this is why you have to start off on the right foot, because then by the time you get to something like this, at least you have a history of communicating well and people are going to be more receptive to something like this. As opposed to now, this, for a lot of people, I think it's just going to be the last straw where they're like, F it. Okay, fine. Get my money back from Walmart, but I'm not going to reorder it.
So if you ordered it within the first year, we'll just say 3 years ago, you're going to get your unit shipped to you in February again, and then maybe April or May if you did it on Walmart. And I'm guessing the subsequent pre-orders after 2019, I don't know.
And this just goes to show that having when you're making a system like this, having a functioning unit that does what it says it's going to do, and even having it in a state that it can be mass produced doesn't guarantee anything.
No,
that's literally the bare minimum of releasing a system. You know, you have to be able to set up the distribution line, send it out, get it to people, and then support it afterwards. So many of these systems, and I don't need to name names, but so many of these systems seem to be treating the launch day of their system as the as the goal line, and it's not. That's the starting gun.
They're taking it for granted how difficult this whole thing is.
Yeah,
they think it's all just fun and games, and then you got to go through this. By the way, brand new pre-orders made after the January 24th, according to Polymega's site, are not going to ship till the third quarter. So they're literally just making enough to get these pre-orders out. I think this company this is my opinion. They don't have money. They've gone through their money. Sure. If they haven't made enough, they can't make enough to guarantee you more after these pre-orders. There's no surplus at all that they put into manufacture. Like none. That's not a good sign at all.
Sure.
You almost never do that. You think, okay, we got the pre-order numbers. We'll do a couple overstock of those just in case we have to return some or some issues. Then we're going to sell them going forward. This is weird to see something like this for something that's been in development this long and they took pre-orders for literally years to say this isn't like analog where we have a set number and that's it. Basically, this is like it was open pre-orders forever. Now you got to wait now for the future batch to come in. Like that's a little bit different. They should have cut it off then at some point and not have these open pre-orders.
Yep,
it's a weird situation, and it still rubs me the wrong way they took all the shots at analog. It still rubs me really the wrong way that they did that. That was like ridiculous. It's like, Even if Analog's ribbing you a little bit, Analog ships shit. They're a professional company. Like we don't question what they're doing at this point. They say it's going
to
happen.
You can. I mean, there's issues with Analog, but that's always been my issue companies like Polymega, companies like Intellivision, Amico, they haven't shipped anything yet.
Yeah, they take shots at the Atari VCS.
They wonder why we give a company like, and I don't think it's a pass, but we're less skeptical about things that Analog announces. It's because they have a series of releases behind them.
They've sold tens of thousands of pieces of hardware. We know that they can do it, and they've done it.
They don't delay
things by years. They don't increase the price of their product by 50%. They say, this is what it's going to cost, this is when it's going to come out, and for the most part, it's around that. Like, it's that.
Yeah, love them or hate them, that's
they're professionals.
What they announce is pretty close to what you get.
So, I hope people get the pre-orders. I hope at least the people that pre-ordered in 2018-19 get it. And the Walmart stuff, is it only available on Walmart? Is that why after 2019, are the pre-orders only available through Walmart? Or were they only available for those couple of years, and now they're switching back to the website? When you clicked on shop, maybe that's why that cutoff is. I think they switched to Walmart at some point from the website, which in retrospect was a horrible freaking idea to do that, if this is how it ends up.
Yeah.
Just horrible. And plus, yes, now you're paying $449 instead of $300. Well, it went up to $400, and now using the coupon code, it's just a mess.
So, all right.
All right, Ian, you know, we love talking about the latest and greatest of Microsoft news.
Louise, yeah. So Microsoft had a real heck of a day the other day. They came out of the gates.
Heck of a 36 hours or so?
Yeah. they came out of the gates all puffed up, talking about how they were going to raise the prices on Xbox Live Gold. Xbox Live Gold is their basic online service, just like how Sony has PSN. Nintendo has Nintendo Switch Online. It's the service that you pay for so that you can play games with your friends.
And they gave you like a free game a month with gold?
There was like games with gold, yeah.
Yeah.
So this was increasingly becoming a competitor to Microsoft's Xbox Live Game Pass, where you can buy that in conjunction with an Xbox Live Gold membership for $15 a month. So they were trying to raise the prices of a month of Xbox Live Gold to $11 a month, an increase from $10. But no one ever really paid for Gold month by month because it was not a deal. It would have been $120 a year if you just paid for it month by month without buying a plan.
And the plan was what?
Plan was $60 a month, $60 a year.
So $5 a month. So it's like you'd be dumb not to do that.
Yeah, $60 a year. But they went to raise that to $120 a year. They were raising 6 months of Xbox Live Gold to $60, an increase of $20 from $40. And then 3 months of Xbox Live Gold was going to be $30 instead of $25. So they were effectively doubling the price of a year-long membership to Xbox Live Gold. And the reason for doing that is because once you start looking at that and you look at the fact that you're paying $10 essentially a month for if you bought like the year pass or the 2 6-month passes, you'd be looking at $10 a month. What they were hoping, obviously, was that people would look at that and then look at the Game Pass subscription and be like, well, I'm just going to pay the extra $5 and get Game Pass. So they were trying to squeeze people out of Gold and into Game Pass. They want to phase Xbox Live Gold out. But it didn't work. People got real pissed.
Oh, by the way, they're also raising the monthly from $10 to $11.
Yeah, no, I mentioned
that. Oh, you mentioned that? Yeah. Okay, sorry, yeah. Missed that.
They're raising the monthly from $10 to $11 so that you would save a dollar a month if you bought the $60 6-month pass.
What the hell?
Yeah.
What kind of deal is that?
It's not a deal. It was obviously a very cold, calculated attempt to get people off of their old service their new service that was $15
a month. Oh, my Lord.
So, yeah, that did not work. People took to the internet afterwards and definitely made it clear that they were unhappy with this change. And it came out, this was something I didn't know because I don't use a Microsoft system currently. Microsoft was the only company that was charging people, was making people have a Gold membership to play the free-to-play online games. So apparently, I did not know this, Apex, Fortnite, games like that, if you have them on PlayStation, someone correct me if I'm wrong, but this is what it seemed like I was reading. If you have like PlayStation or something like that, you can play those without having the PlayStation Network account. Microsoft still made sure that you had the Gold account, so you had to pay them something a month to play those free online games. So, yeah, they updated their announcement. We messed up today. I hate this fucking wording. We messed up today, and you were right to let us know, the update read. Connecting and playing with friends is a vital part of gaming, and we failed to meet the expectations of players who count on it every day. As a result, we have decided not to change Xbox Live Gold pricing. In addition, the statement announced that reversing years of precedent, access to free-to-play games would no longer require an active subscription to Xbox Live Gold. They'll be working to implement that change in the coming month.
So they're doing that as penance.
Yes. Yeah, basically, they not only reversed their decision, they walked back something that they had previously done for years that had kind of just gone under the radar with a mumble and a grumble.
But it's even worse because they're doubling it to get you not to buy it. So you get the Game Pass Ultimate, which includes Gold at $15 a month. So they're basically wanting you to spend. They want you to triple how much you're spending almost, right? Because they want you to go from $60 a month to 15 times 12, which is what? I mean, this is really what their plan was, which failed spectacularly, 15 times 12, to 180.
Yes.
They want you to triple.
Correct.
How much you want to spend. I don't know why I need a calculator. 5 to 15.
I don't know.
I don't know why. But they want to triple, in essence, how much you spend. And yes, you are getting the Game Pass, but if you don't want it or need it, you want me to go and spend triple the amount of money. That's really the end goal here.
Yeah, let me reiterate. I do think Game Pass is a pretty good deal, but if you don't want it, you shouldn't be.
You should be cajoled. Well, it's like the whole. This is like soft drinks. When you go, this is the exact thing when you get soft drinks when you go to the movie theater. Well, the small is $260, the medium is $280, or I get the super large for $3. It's double the amount. I might as well spend. You don't need that, though.
Right.
So you're not saving money.
Right. Exactly.
You're just going to take a piss halfway through the movie now. I figured that out in my late 20s. Like, well, this isn't a deal. No one needs 64 ounces of Diet Coke to watch a 2-hour movie. But it's only 30 cents more than the small. That's exactly what they're doing here, Microsoft.
Love to slam down a half gallon of caffeinated beverage during my 3-hour
but that's
superhero
what it is.
Movie.
Spend more and save.
Yes.
That's what they're trying to do. To you here.
It's like what you always, I've heard it before, but holy you always God. Say, Frank says, it's like,
you don't want to lose money.
Yeah, you don't want to lose money.
You don't lose money when I'm spending more.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's insane.
Bonnie did that yesterday.
She said you don't want to lose money?
No, we were going grocery shopping, and we decided to go through the Starbucks drive-thru to get coffee, and I was like, I'll get the coffee, it's on me. And she's like, no, but I pay with my card. And I was like, right, but let me buy you the coffee and save you the money. She's like, but I don't get points that way.
Oh, oh boy.
I'm like, all right, I'll just buy you something at the grocery store. You can buy the coffee.
That's the mindset we're in. Spend more and save. That's the American way.
Yeah.
And live on credit. That's the other one, too. But okay. In this post, it details that those looking to upgrade from Gold to Game Pass Ultimate will have any remaining Gold time automatically converted into Game Pass Ultimate for up to 36 months at no additional cost. Okay, they're at least trying to make right a little bit. This may allow for a bit of savings if you know you'll use Xbox Live for a few years. In theory, this means you can buy up to 3 years' worth of cards. We'll get into the cards in a second. Add them to your Xbox account and then convert them to Game Pass to save $180 compared to the new Xbox Live rates. Or $360 if you can score 3 12-month Xbox Live subscriptions for $6 each. What I saw in a post was they already shipped out. I guess you can go to GameStop or whatever. You go to Best Buy. You can buy the cards. Just add it to your account. They already shipped the cards with the new prices to these stores. That's what I heard.
That's what I had heard too. I couldn't find any actual confirmation of that. But I don't think this was intended to be a publicity stunt.
Well, no, this was planned.
Yes.
I don't know how you think this is not going to go over like a wet fart,
lead balloon.
Like, how do you not think that this is going to? You're basically wanting people to triple how much they spent. Triple.
Yeah, like usually you do that in like slower increments. Like, you know, Netflix has been slowly raising the price of a subscription by $1 every year.
It's like $1.80. It's like, okay,
I don't realize I'm being boiled. I still think I'm paying $7.99 for Netflix, and it's actually closer to $14.
It's more than inflation, but it's not tripling it in 1 year. If Netflix tomorrow said, all right, you're paying $13 a year, we're going to go to 40, they would lose a huge amount of people. Because now you're going from, I'm spending $150 a year on Netflix to like $400, $450. It's like, what? That doesn't fly. They wanted to do the thing where, well, you get Disney Plus and the Hulu and ESPN Plus bundle. You spend a little bit more. You get three services. But you say, this isn't that. This is like trying to force you into a higher bracket and then shame you to buying the extra large fucking popcorn that you don't really need. That's what this is.
You definitely never need that giant bucket of popcorn. And I love popcorn. I fucking love popcorn.
I'm fine with the medium for $7. I don't need the extra large for $8.50. Yeah. I'm never going to eat that much popcorn. Now, my mouth is watering. I mean, fasting. I'm never going to need that much popcorn unless you have a family of like 17 people. You ever get that giant bucket?
Yeah, I have.
And they sell like, anymore?
It's like, this is absurd. It's like a fucking wash basin.
No one's going to gunk you with that really nice syrup. I don't want to call it. Is it really butter? Whatever that syrup is, that has a butter-like taste to it.
It's flavored oil.
By the way, you don't need that. But a little bit of salt on the popcorn is fine. It's good enough. You don't really need the butter. It's like too much.
I love popcorn.
I don't eat popcorn enough. I know I took sort of my mom buying me the popcorn. I was a brat about it. Popcorn's good, though.
It is.
Somebody get the little pieces caught in your throat. You don't want that. No one wants, or your teeth. What were we talking about? Yeah, this is insane. I'm glad Microsoft backtracked, but I can't believe they wouldn't market research a huge change like this or run it through. I mean, like, hey, yeah, Fred, this looks great. We're going to potentially triple our profits on the subscriptions. No, you're not.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
Bad idea.
Anyway, is that it on this one?
That's it on that one.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
All right, Ian.
Patty Roo.
Okay. So this came to our attention recently. I guess this was announced a month or so back. A disc-based emulation console was announced, called the Mega Engine. It was announced in late 2020, December 31st, to play PC Engine CD games / TurboGrafx and Mega CD / Sega CD games. It's being put out by PCE Works, which is a company that makes illegal bootlegs.
Yeah.
And has done so for years.
For years. Fuck them. About at PCE Works, we love NEC's PC Engine. Translation, we love fleecing people with fancy schmancy reprints of games we don't own the rights to do repros of, and then selling them in fancy boxes.
You like the console because you're making money selling your bullshit repro games. You don't like the devs and publishers who you're stealing from.
Right.
But that's okay.
But that's all right.
By the way, it's not like they're charging $5 for these. You go online, these are going for like, you know, these are not cheap, these things. They're charging these like they're brand new games, basically, that you get. So they've done stuff like Rondo of Blood, Repro, Sapphire, games like that. They've done Bonk, I think, in the past. I saw Bonk, Beyond Shadowgate Repro. And before we get into this actual console idea, it's harder to tell. The discs are usually marked separately, but on the outside, it's a little bit harder to tell sometimes that these are even repros.
Yeah.
You got to have a keen eye. I'm not saying they're 100% accurate, but you got to, I've been on something before. My fault. It wasn't marked on, this was years ago. I got the Godzilla Turbo Duo version. I buy it, and it was like $350, which was like what it goes for, $300. Then afterwards, I'm looking at it before it gets shipped me. I'm like, what the fuck is that? That's not Godzilla. I didn't know they existed at this point in time. And so I said like to the person, listen, this isn't what I want. This isn't the real game. And he refunded me my money, or else I would have made a stink about it. But that's the point, is like I had to take a second glance before I realized it. And I had won the fucking thing and didn't realize it.
Here's what they have to say. Are the games in their FAQ, are the games clearly marked as PCE Works items? To clearly distinguish all items from any 80s or 90s releases, all manuals and discs carry our logo. If you're ever in doubt about any item you see for sale on eBay or elsewhere, feel free to ask us for any details on noticeable differences.
It shouldn't have to be that close.
Yeah, it really shouldn't have to.
It should have to be where you ask us for differences. So their company... MO is bullshit. What are they, based in Europe? That's probably someone hasn't gotten past them. Yeah. Or hasn't gone after them. But now they're announcing this console. Let's try to think about this console.
I just want people to understand the level of shittiness going on here.
Okay.
For instance, for an example, the PCE Memories box set, Arcade Gems, contains a copy of Strider, Mato Monogatari, Mad Stalker, and Ginga Fuke Densetsu Sapphire. So four games in a box with a poster and some stickers, €130.
That's about 160 US, something like that. Patmath, 150.
Dead of Brain 1 and 2, €50 for a reprint.
That they don't own the rights to.
Don't fucking support these people.
You know what it costs if it's a CD game to do a run of CDs in a case? It's under $1 each, and I'm being very fucking generous. If you do a decent amount, it's $1 to make a CD with a case and full artwork. It's $1 to do that, and they're charging what a company like Limited Run or Retrobit would charge for like a real re-release, where the money goes to the actual IP holders. It's horrifying. It's horrifying to me, and people can get tricked. All right, is that it?
That's it.
You want to talk about the console real quick?
Sure.
I don't want this to be a PCE Works bash fest, but we have to bring that up before we talk about this idea.
Yeah.
Because we just talked about the Polymega.
I mean, I do want it to be that, but we
okay.
Yeah.
There's a market for this. We talked about this. This is why I thought the Polymega at $300, there's a market for disc-based, for CDs and other like media, a console to play it, play the original media on your TV or on your monitor, like this. They even show off the Super Air Zonk in the background. Is it their shitty repro? Or is that the real one? I don't know. I can't tell. It's too far away. But they're showing you that play these games on a console. Emulation based. We don't know what they're using. There's Magic Engine, and there's another PC Engine emulator out there. There's like one or two others there, but there probably would be a market for this if it's decently priced. If this is like $100, people would probably buy something like this.
I'm still kind of interested in what the market is, though. It does two systems, which is interesting. It does the PC Engine CD stuff, and it does Sega CD, but it doesn't do the Hue cards.
Sure.
So you could go ahead and get this, and like I think we were talking about yesterday, they'll probably end up being a way to load the ROMs for the Hue cards on there. But it's weird to me, who wants to buy something and use ROMs for one thing, but wants to use the physical media for another?
Sure.
If this was closer to what the Poly Mega was offering with their base unit,
with Saturn,
where it does like Saturn and Neo CD and stuff like that, then it makes more sense to me.
Is Poly Mega the PlayStation? I forget.
I can't recall.
I'll look it up.
That CD one that we were looking at that we talked about years ago was supposed to do PlayStation. I can't remember if Poly Mega.
No, just PS1.
Okay.
I'm looking at, PS1 32X CD Neo Geo. So you're saying if it was similar to the Poly Mega offer with like five or six.
Right. If it did multiple discs, but it's just odd to me that this is doing the disc work for two systems, yet it doesn't offer the cartridge.
And two that are unrelated, by the way.
Yes, two that are unrelated, but it doesn't offer the cartridge support.
And one that you're not currently making fucking money off by making your shitty repros. One so, you are, not the other one.
Yeah.
Well, as far as I know.
So, yeah, it's odd to me. It seems hyper-specific. You know, that my problems with the company aside, I don't know. I just don't know exactly what the market is.
Well, I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see if we get some angry backlash by calling out PC Works. We never brought that up on the podcast ever. Never did that. How come on the website there's no? It's not like a Shopify thing. There's a fucking order form like it's the 80s. They have to email you back. What is it, like a fucking drug deal to order on their website? Their repros. You got to do an order form, send it and submit it through the site, and then they'll email you back. Make sure you're not a fucking narc. Which they have to be, because I'm surprised no one's coming. It's literally an order form that you email to them that they have to send back. It says it on this website. That's a reputable company right there. Do you know anyone who's purchased from them before and gone through that process?
No.
Are they outcasts on the what is it, the PC Engine FX forum?
I know most people I know of varying, like it's weird, like across the spectrum don't like them. So I don't know where their fan base lies, but I'm sure we'll probably find out.
Is PC Engine FX still around.com?
Yeah. I don't go there, though.
Oh, the site can't be reached. Oh.
That's definitely there.
It's down right now. Uh-oh.
Unless you put in the wrong address.
PCEngineFX.com, right?
My buddy was just linking me to there, like, the other day.
Okay, well, it's currently down. All right. Well, there you have it. Maybe there's a PC Engine war going on, cyber war that we're not aware of. There's been a first strike. Is it coming up for you?
I was Googling it just to make, because I always put the address in wrong. That's why I asked.
I'm not saying I want you to order it. I'm really curious. I don't want to do it myself. So I want someone to put in the order form and see what the response is. I'm very curious to get one of these PC Works. Like, it's like you gotta vouch for someone and go in a back alley and someone. I gotta be strapped in order to get my fucking rip-off games done. Holy shit. Sorry. All right. Yeah, we'll come back to that Mega Engine at some point. Back. All right, Ian, it's time to listen to some voicemails from the faithful listeners out there. You can go to anchor.fm slash the CU podcast and leave us a message or a question. Try to keep it short. I like those 20 second in and out. Hey, my name is this, go, and that's it. Don't leave me hanging there.
Let's do it.
Okay, this is from Cameron, who's got a question.
Hello, Pat, Ian. Cameron from Scotland here. Quick question for Ian. As it's very evident now that Sony and Microsoft have emphasised their focus on digital distribution via their own platforms, is it perhaps a beginning of a slow end for game stores and ultimately retro game stores as each generation of gamers become more accustomed to losing out on physical editions of modern games?
I think, I mean, on a timeline long enough, yeah, physical game stores, you know, probably have an expiration date. But I think currently right now, yes, here comes Patty Roo with a certain Blu-ray disc. Fuck me. Yes, I do think that physical game stores will cease to exist at some point. I'm not saying necessarily soon. Right now, it depends on what they're selling. A game store like GameStop that is only selling physical copies of games from modern systems where digital distribution is gaining a big foothold, I think those are going to go the way of the buffalo quicker than a game store that is, you know, its reason for existing is selling physical copies of old retro games. At some point, it's all video games, yes, but they are kind of two distinct hobbies. I think that's where we're at right now. We will see the end of places like GameStop, I think, in the nearer future than we will places like, say, Luna. But yeah, the days are numbered for all of it in some way, shape, or form.
If you check out a certain documentary, which is what half of this is about the end of retail in general, but more specifically when it comes to game stores, it's a yes. It's just, when does it end? Joe Santulli says, you know, with digital, it stops. So at that point, you don't have people buying physical media or wanting to go back to it. So there is a tail end. It's just, when does
it end?
And
you don't have things coming back into the store either. Yeah. You're losing any sort of stock.
There is a time limit. So children and even teenagers today won't care about physical media. They already don't care about it when it comes to movies or music. That's pretty much done. Except for little niche things, it's pretty much done going forward. People won't want... I mean, you can't give away even Blu-rays at the swap meet for the most part. Video games is the last one. So it's going to happen the same. It's just, when is it going to happen? 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. There's going to be a limit. And there will still be video game stores around, but it'll be more and more like...
It'll be less
curiosities.
Less.
You won't need to have... Even in the past 5 years, since... We were talking about this with the peak of, like, I'll say retro game collecting in general, in terms of, like, everyone's into it. There was a major game retailer in the Northwest that closed. They had like 30 retro game stores, something like that, in the Northwest. They closed most of them in the past few years. They closed them up. They overexpanded. But they thought the interest was there. And it was there probably for a few years, 3, 4, 5 years. Like, there was a lot of interest. But then once you get to, like, 2016, 17, 18, it starts to taper down for a lot of different reasons. And it starts to get less, and the demographic shift, other products fill the gaps and things like that. But there will be less people going forward that want to collect stuff in those walls over there. That's just the way it is. But check out the Blu-ray. I don't know why I didn't have one here. There you go. Let's see the next one here.
Hey guys, long time, first time, big fan. How do you think the Wii U will be looked at in about 20 years?
What a coincidence. Stick around. I believe that's the Q&A. Not to spoil it, but I believe that's the Q&A. And we didn't do that because of that, but that's a coincidence. So it was a good Q&A selection on the Patreon poll. I think it wins out. If it wins out... No, it doesn't win out, so we can discuss it real quick. That was second place.
Okay.
So sorry for cutting you off there. So what was saying?
Do you think it'll be similar to the Virtual Boy in the sense that nobody but collectors...
He's the same person who probably suggested it for the Q&A. You double-dip in here, Colton, but I appreciate the hustle. So is it going to be closer to the Wii U, to the Virtual Boy, or like the Dreamcast, where there's a hardcore following, you know, 20 years later for it?
I don't know that it's going to be the Virtual Boy, because I don't think it's that laughable of a failure, but I also don't think it's necessarily going to have the appeal that the Dreamcast does when...
All the games are re-released.
All the games are re-released on a system that has more stuff on it that people enjoy. I don't think there's really any... It remains to be seen how... Super Mario 3D World handles the segments that, you know, used the Wii U tablet. But I can't even really think of any games on the Wii U that were drastically improved by using the tablet. So I don't think I don't think you're going to have a big fan base of people in 20 years who are buying Wii U's so they can play Ubisoft Zombie U. You know, the way it was intended. I just don't see it.
And to say it closer to the Dreamcast potentially, there's like there's this romantic notion around the Dreamcast because it was Sega's last system and last hurrah for some of those franchises, or you know what I mean. So. The Wii U doesn't have that cachet. It's like you're gonna have other, you're gonna get another Star Fox game eventually. You know what I mean? There wasn't even a Metroid on Wii U, so it doesn't even fit into that category. It's like a blip in time for Nintendo. The Wii U.
It's a very wobbly stepping stone from the Wii to the Switch.
It's a half console progression, yeah. Basically, when it comes to that. All right, next. What do we got? But thanks, Cole, for that.
Hey guys, this is Branton from Branton, Missouri. I just wanted to acknowledge that with the theme song at the beginning of the show, I know that you guys think that you fade it out so that everybody thinks the line is no one out there is immune, but I know that the line is actually no one out there is amused, and it was part of the court order that you had to include this to reveal the true nature of your program. And I guess in that respect, you could say no one out there is confused about this. But my favorite NES game is Dick Tracy, and hope you guys can maybe work that in sometime. All right.
This is a little bit harder than it looks, huh, Branton? It's a little bit more difficult. All right, next.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is David from Dallas, longtime listener, first-time caller. I was wondering if you guys ever played a licensed game you liked so much that you had to check out the property the game was based off of.
Huh.
For example, when I was a kid, I remember renting WWF SmackDown on the PlayStation and liking it so much that I had to start watching wrestling to figure out who all the wrestlers were.
Wow.
Thanks, guys. Love the podcast and keep up the good work.
David, that's one of the best questions we've gotten in a long time.
That is a really good one.
I don't know if I've ever thought about that. So a game
I wish
that,
I had a little bit more time to think about
a game
it,
that you didn't
know
the IP
answers.
Of. So you got into wrestling after playing a crappy wrestling game as a kid. You say the original WF WrestleMania?
Much that you had to check out the property.
SmackDown. You said SmackDown.
Oh, SmackDown.
For example, when I was a kid, I remember renting WWF SmackDown on the PlayStation.
Okay, God. I'm thinking when I was a kid, God, he must be like 20, 25 years old, the guy. I can't think of one on top of my head.
So, I mean, it's funny that he mentions that because...
GoGo 13, obviously. That's it. I didn't know it was a hardcore, mature... Japanese manga. I can't believe I didn't think that that's the one.
Yeah,
that's it.
That's a good one. I have a similar experience with wrestling. When WCW NWO versus the World came out on the N64, I think that was like right before I started watching wrestling, and I remember going over to my friend's house and playing that game and really enjoying
it. '97.
And asking a bunch of questions about it, and I started watching wrestling soon after. It wasn't that I'd never watched wrestling, but I'd been a lapsed fan. So that did kind of help get me back into it. Other ones, playing Tecmo Cup soccer game and some of the Captain Tsubasa games has gotten me more interested in the Captain Tsubasa mangas and animes. And when I think it was Dragon Ball FighterZ came out, that kind of reinvigorated my interest in Dragon Ball, which is something that Vani loves, but I'm not 100% as knowledgeable on. I've seen all of the original Dragon Ball, but not Z. So those are, three examples. That's happened a few times, and probably more times if I were to actually really sit down and think about it.
Hey, this is Nick from Tokyo.
Hi.
I was wondering what your thoughts on Zoop was. Remember Zoop? All those commercials and that Blockbuster campaign they had and stuff? Yeah, so I want to know what your thoughts on Zoop are or were.
So Zoop came out in 95. I remember it. That must have been on the PC as well, wasn't it?
It was on the PC because that's actually how I remember Zoop.
Yeah. I don't remember the Blockbuster commercials. Maybe if you put it in front of me, I'd see it and remember again. I do remember them trying making Zoop a thing, though.
They definitely did. The problem
is... giving a marketing push for Zoop.
So I remember my buddy had the demo, and we played the demo on his PC using his Gravis gamepad. And I remember it being an interesting idea, but the problem was is it's not really a puzzle game.
It looks like Dudes with Attitudes, kind of.
The game just gets... They're, well, not exactly, but Well, I could see a little bit of that, yeah.
It's more, it's like action and puzzle.
It's very action-y, and it gets to the point where it wanted to be a puzzle game. It wanted you to think that you were using your brain, but it's very action-y, and it just gets to the point where it gets too fast, and it's literally not possible to keep up. I don't...
There's a reason there wasn't a Zoop franchise.
Right. It's amusing, but there's really not much to it. There's not a whole lot of using your brain when you're playing it. It's just fast fingers, and it gets kind of old kind of quick.
Publisher was Viacom New Media?
Yes. Yeah. I still remember what the pieces looked like. And
there was one on the Jaguar? I did not know there was Zoop that was on the Jaguar.
Zoop was everywhere.
I didn't know it was on the Jaguar.
They really did try to make Zoop a thing.
God, what a fucking library of games on the Jaguar. Jesus Christ. Okay, next.
It's Cameron. And I have an N64, and I really want to get this one game, Animal Crossing. I have it for, like, every system, but they have one for the N64. But unfortunately, it's only for the Japanese versions. Is there an easy way to jailbreak your U.S. N64 to play that game? Thanks. Let me know.
Cameron, did you dial the Luna video games by accident? You think you were talking to Ian? There?
Yeah.
Is that what he was asking how to jailbreak your N64 to play?
You don't have to jailbreak anything. I think there's like tabs in there that you can melt down, but I think you can actually just take the system apart and remove the restrictor plate underneath the cartridge slot so that the cartridges fit in.
Oh, for N64?
Look it up.
We're not Google.
It's easy. Google it.
All right.
Hi, guys. I love the show. I love the Not For Resale documentary.
Oh.
I just wanted to plug a French documentary about collectors in Japan called Collector's Quest Season 3. I made the subtitles for. It's half in French, half in Japanese, but it's full of retro goodness, of preservationists, of not for sale.
All right. You owe us money now for this advertiser, I think. I know. I appreciate it, but I don't appreciate it. You're plugging your show. That's fine. I've seen a little bit of the documentary. It's interesting.
Check it out. It's nice.
Check it out. I want to invoice you $500 now. This is from Thomas Helmer.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. Ah. This is Thomas from Iowa. I'm a 90s PC gamer, but I was just wondering, what Apple or PC exclusive games from the 80s or 90s do you guys think still hold up from a gameplay perspective? Thanks.
Exclusive PC games from the 80s that were never on something else or Apple. Any of the Sierra Adventure games or a lot of the LucasArts stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a ton.
One of my favorites is a graphic horror game called Crypt of Medea. I don't think that was ever on anything other than an Apple II.
I mean, God, X-Wing and TIE Fighter were never re-released on another console.
No, they weren't. And those are fantastic games.
But Dark Force was on PlayStation.
Yeah, Dark Force.
Civilization eventually came to every console. I mean, there's a ton. I mean, it's like you get to think of ones that weren't, I guess, which ones weren't ported over. I don't know, Noctropolis. There you go. Check out Noctropolis.
Jill of the Jungle.
Jill of the Jungle! Was that Apogee?
Yeah.
It was Apogee.
It was.
All right. A couple more. It's from John.
Hey, guys. A couple quick questions for you. First, what is the last verse of the theme song for Flea Market Madness?
What?
After Frank introduces himself, I cannot figure that out for the life of me.
Bop-a-doo-wop.
And two, do you think Nintendo will extend the life of Super Mario 35? Thanks for all the hard work and keep it up.
All right, John. Get back on the rig there, John. Yeah, it's a zoop-a-doo-bop sort of thing at the end of the...
Oh, so it's not actual words?
No. Zoop-a-doo-bop, bop, bop. I should have went to jingle writing. I have a gift. I have a big head when it comes to I love my jingles.
I'm glad.
My mom used to make up tons of little jingles, and that's where I got it from. My mom's, you know, kind of insane, but that's where I got it from.
Jingle jangle. Fuck it up from
What was the other thing you said? Oh, will Nintendo extend Super Mario 35? We got, a couple months to see.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a great game. I would love them to keep it. Unfortunately, I see less and less people playing it when I sign on now. So I feel like, not into the game, but just like, you know, you can check what people are playing. I see less people playing it. So if Nintendo sees a decline in the user base, I have a feeling they may use that as an excuse to go ahead and axe it like they said they were going to.
But then
to.
Why just keep it going? Just the servers probably don't take up that much space.
Because Nintendo's going to Nintendo.
See, that's the thing. That's the one thing where it's like, oh, we got to preserve a way to experience that again. Because if that goes away... how are you going to be able to do that experience again?
Right.
Unless you set up some sort of weird private server to do that. I hope so. I hope they do the right thing. Brendan, we'll do a couple more.
Hey, Pat and Ian, for Cyberpunk, do you think the death threats they got last time they delayed the game contributed towards releasing before the game was ready? Side note, because Pat wanted a return of Catholic Fish Days, Vatican II didn't exactly change those rules. That was just the message.
Oh, this is a comment about that. This guy that's trying to be smart.
The current canon law still says the norm is to not eat meat on Fridays throughout the year. Fish is still allowed, but regional bishop conferences can change some of those details for their area. U.S. bishops, after the council, lifted their requirement to abstain from meat on Fridays outside of Lent, saying people could substitute some other sacrifice.
Okay, we got it. It happened after Vatican II. That's fine. It happened after that.
More knowledge
60s.
Is always good, Pat.
That's fine. So that's fine. Nice to know. No, it's fine.
What was the question about Cyberpunk?
Oh, about like did the death threats
affect them releasing it? No, I don't think so.
No, there's too much money at stake.
I think investors. Yeah. I think investors are why the game.
The investors want to make their money.
Yeah.
Had they known it would have been a fucking disaster, they probably would have said, okay, this is a disaster. And I've done that. Okay. But no, it's all in good fun with Brendan, though, because he did a follow-up apologizing. I don't fucking care. I just think it's funny. He got me on a technicality. And we'll do, let's see, one or two more.
One more.
Hey, Pat and Ian. It's Brian, longtime fan of the show. Do either of you have any fun memories growing up with small mom-and-pop game stores or rental places?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You have a very soothing voice.
Thanks, Ian.
Not you.
Oh, you're looking at me when you said that. No. Oh, Brian? Want to play it again?
Yeah, it was nice.
Hey, Pat and Ian. It's Brian, longtime fan of the show. Do either of you have any fun memories growing up with small mom-and-pop game stores or rental places?
You want to read children's books?
Read children's books, Brian. Right. I definitely do. There was one in my hometown called Worldwide Music and Games. I remember going there when it was only around for like 10 or 11 years, but I remember going there when I was young, and I also met one of my closest friends, Jay, who no longer lives in the U.S. He lives in Japan, but I met my buddy Jay there. That was where I went from like the time I was 10 until the time I moved, 10 or 11. That was where I went. And there was a really good Jamaican restaurant next door that I used to always go and get patties from. Cool place. Pick up CDs. They were good about special orders. They always had they carried multiple systems. They didn't focus, you know, heavily on retro. Retro was still kind of a burgeoning idea then. I was going there in like 99 2000, but they carried Dreamcast stuff, and they still carried NES and Super Nintendo games and stuff like that too. So yeah, I very fond memories of that store. And I ended up, my second apartment ended up being right across the street from it for like the last year that it was open.
Oh, so in terms of, I have tons of stories about rental places. I always bring up the Magic Star Video case, because that was like, well, you get free rentals, because remember, you had to buy a fucking membership to a lot of these places. You had to buy like $100 membership in order to rent VHS tapes from these places in the 80s, even early 90s. It was weird. So I guess they wanted your money up front. I don't know.
Well, because the copies of the videos were $100. Stupid expensive.
VHS
too.
Tapes were $100.
Yeah, and in the 80s, like to get like an Aliens or something like that, you had to buy like the special rental copy, and it was stupid expensive.
Yeah, it wasn't like Columbia House when it was like, oh, you're like 10 for a dollar. No. So I remember my father, that's when I always said, what the two games I got, Wizards and Warriors and Mickey Mouse Capade. I went to those, rented those two at the same time. Or the first time I played Super Mario Brothers 2 was, it was rented because you couldn't find it for sale, but the rental place had it. The next town over was a little mom-pop place. It was almost like a house that was converted to a video rental. So it was like the downstairs. I'll never forget, they had the Silkworm arcade game there. Never forget that. And then I got Super Mario Bros. 2 and played it for like 3 days. And I was like, oh my God, this is the best game ever, because it was. You know, so I always had those memories and tons of going to the local place where it was a little Indian-owned convenience store where they had like the porn in the back. It always had the porn in the back with the beads. And then, but before that, you saw it, there was a little rack, like 3.5 feet tall, like this size of the NES games. This was your section of NES games, right? It was like 3.5 by like 2.5. And they had a decent selection there, but it was good because it was off the beaten track. It wasn't like in the middle. So it was like only people from that town went there. Mm-hmm. So you're more likely to find potentially the popular game. Like Baseball Stars, you could get there potentially, or, you know, one of those. But they also had the weird, you know, like I said, the Magenta multi-cart that I never saw before. We rented that, me and Billy, and played that that weekend. So those are my my memories there. In terms of local game stores, I don't have a huge amount before 2000, except for UVT, which was in Scotch Plains, New Jersey, right by Bowcraft Amusement Park, which I brought up every other month in the show. And it was one of the earliest, even probably before Funko Land, or just about that time, we're talking early 90s to mid 90s, where they would, you could trade in stuff and they would price it out. They didn't have a thing. They would just say, they'd either buy it completely or say, we don't need this. They had too many of them. It was all or nothing for that. And I remember that might have been where I got a TurboGrafx-16 game that I always remember. Did I have Dragon Spear or not? Or did I rent it? I might have gotten from them and bought it, but I definitely traded in TurboGrafx games to them for cash or credit, and also some NES games I still had. We're talking like 92, 91, or that early, like before I was going to Funko Land, like that early, 90, 91.
Wow.
So it was, yeah. And I remember it was always run by a couple of women that were in there. I remember seeing any men where I think it was a family-owned thing. And it was VHS and video games. Like, that's what they did back then. Yeah, it must be, I'm talking like 90, 91. Super early. And then, of course, once you get to late 90s, there was like little video game places inside indoor flea markets. Route 18 Flea Market had a guy there. There was places here and there. Digital Press, Joe Santulli, one of the earlier game stores I was aware of. All right. Well, thanks for the voicemail stuff. Thanks for calling me out on my fishing accuracy, Brendan. Appreciate that. All right. And then we got a Patreon poll, Ian. How do you access the CU Podcast Patreon?
You go to patreon.com/CU Podcast.
And you get some writing from Ian there once a week. He's going to post something, hopefully.
Yep. And then we do hangouts. I did a hangout last Sunday. It was good.
Was a good hangout?
It was a good hangout.
I didn't pop in. I forgot.
Some new faces. New face.
New faces?
It was like four or five of us, and there was a new face. Yes, Charlie, I believe his name was. It's nice to meet you, Charlie.
Oh, Charlie, what a nice name. My grandfather's name.
Yeah, that was a good name. So yeah, it was fun. Full video podcast. These poll topics.
Yes,
we do poll topics.
And well, I do not have... Wow, I'm really dropping the ball. I do not have the percentages in place. I went back to three. In third place... 13%. Wow, that's bad. What retro game deserves the Battle Royale treatment a la Super Mario 35? In second place, we just did it. How will we view the Wii U in 20 years closer to the Virtual Boy or Dreamcast? Good thing you didn't win, but that was 40%. That was strong. And in first place, Ian, it's a what if, which you don't like to do. What would the video game world look like if Nintendo never existed? This will either be a disaster or fun. Maybe both.
Well, I think, first of all, the big video game mascot would be Lee the Leather Boot, the Coleco, the Coleco mascot.
Was that really me? Lee the Leather?
No.
They must have had a Coleco, Connecticut Leather Company mascot, though.
I'm trying Coleco to picture mascot. what the big mascots would be if Nintendo never existed.
Well, you still have Sonic?
Still have Sonic, yeah. But someone would have had to have taken Nintendo's
Popeye.
Place.
It could have been a Popeye game still. Could have Popeye in there.
Could have had Popeye. I wonder if Nintendo didn't exist, would
Alex Kidd would have taken the reins and ran with it?
I do think Alex Kidd may have.
No, I wouldn't have.
No, I do think Alex Kidd might have been a little bit more popular.
Alex Kidd's terrible.
Alex Kidd with his elf
monkey
ears.
Good looks. Was he a monkey or an elf? We don't know.
No, I do wonder how quickly we would have moved into more complex story-based games if Nintendo had not existed.
Versus a quick arcade type of
games. Yes, and I always think in my mind, because this is one of those questions I think that, you know, people throw out there every once in a while. I think we would have been looking at quicker score-based, arcade-based stuff for a lot longer. Nintendo's home console, you know, it got what's the stuff that really made it popular? Super Mario Brothers, Zelda, Metroid, games like that, Kid Icarus, games that took multiple hours to complete, games that gave you passwords so that you could come back and finish them later. I don't think we necessarily would have transitioned into those deeper experiences as quickly.
Certainly not through Atari, because they're still pumping out the fucking third or fourth version of Pole Position in the late 80s. You know, like, oh, you got your Pac-Man for $2,600. Now get it for the 5,200. Now get it for the 7,800. It's like, can you evolve a little bit what we're experiencing here? They're still stuck in the arcades,
right?
About how that's how video games should be. And it's like, you have to do something different at some point.
Exactly. And even Sega, you know, say the Sega Master System had, you know, some RPGs and stuff like that, but Sega themselves were still largely focused on arcade stuff. Sure, they had Phantasy Star, but, you know, their big hits for the Genesis early on were things like Space Harrier 2. That was like the original pack-in. Or not the original pack-in.
Space Harrier 2.
Yeah, Space Harrier 2.
That was an early one. Altered Beast, though, was a pack-in.
Altered Beast was the first pack-in, but that's an arcade. You had the sports games. You know, and then you had even their stuff that wasn't in the arcade. You had stuff like Streets of Rage, which was obviously imitating stuff like Fatal Fury. Or not Fatal Final Fury, Fight. Final Fight. And Sonic the Hedgehog.
Well, let's take it back a little earlier, because by that point, at least the NES was dominating. So sure. Master System, we look at the Master System library. There's not a lot you can look at that probably wasn't either influenced by Nintendo or maybe Phantasy Star. It's like, well, there was also PC games that were role-playing games, so it's hard to even look at the Master System and be like, wow, they're trying to do something a huge amount different, because there's still like arcade games, sports games. There's not that sort of killer game. Alex Kidd in Miracle World tries to be Super Mario Brothers, but they probably only made Alex Kidd because of Super Mario Brothers. You know what I mean? That's sure. Probably what influenced it. So it's hard to see what would have happened with Sega.
The first zillion's a little bit deeper. But yeah, no, overall, I
Alex Kidd and Miracle World. When did that game fucking come out? November 1st, 86. So that game was probably a direct response to Super Mario Brothers. We need a Super Mario Brothers. We do. They saw that come out a year before. Like, we need a game like that to sell our console.
So
it's tough. It might have. I'll say this. We were talking about the crash. How quickly would we have come back from the crash without Nintendo for consoles in the 80s? Would have taken like 6, 7, 8 years to get there. Would have taken until the Sega Genesis to eventually come out and be like, okay, we're doing something radically different from these crappy Atari retreads and the eighth version of Pac-Man. We want to play something besides Missile Command. Well, you know, here's Sonic. But Sonic was a response to Mario. So it's like, without Nintendo, the landscape could have been entirely different. And now a computer might have been the same exact.
Right, I think with computer you would have seen a very similar progression, and that's what I was going to end this on, is that I think we would have, when you look at stuff like especially the Xbox or the Sony systems, I think we probably would have ended up getting here anyways, because a lot of these the more modern systems are more taking their cues from PC gaming than they were previous generations of console gaming or arcade gaming. So I think we would have gotten here eventually.
But the 80s and 90s.
But that, yeah, the in-between era would have been very
weird.
Different. Yeah.
Would there have been another company that would have swept in and tried to do the Disneyification kind of and succeeded? Because obviously Sega... Well, maybe Sega wouldn't have went for the teenage audience. Maybe they would have went for the kids if Nintendo wasn't there. Or maybe Atari would have, on the seventh round attempt, been successful. You know, after the eighth time they've tried to come out with a console that was too old and no one wanted, would they have been successful? Remember, they were still trying to sell the 2600 in the late 80s. Under $50. They were trying to sell a 12-year-old console in the late 80s at a discount. Yeah. Not even the 7800. That was here and gone. Like
I can't remember which game it was, but I picked up an Atari game at Luna the one day because it had like a really nice label on it. It was really clean, and I looked at it, and it was 1989.
Yeah.
1989 was the date printed on the fucking label.
Yeah, they went to like 90 on Atari games. 90 or maybe 91. They went a long time, but no one was playing them in this country, at least, maybe in South America or somewhere else. But who would have taken up the torch and try to be as bold? Because even Nintendo, crap, they were bold. Almost every console, they try to do something different. They tried to do something different with the NES. They threw Rob on there. They gave you a zapper gun. You know, they tried to make it entertaining, and it worked. Super Nintendo was just sort of that logical progression. But then N64, they tried to do something radically different, and it semi-worked. GameCube was kind of different. Wii was really different. Wii U was really different and failed. Virtual Boy was really different and failed. And then Switch is really different and has done great. So... yeah, it's tough. I think that mid '80s to late '90s era would have been weird as hell. Would have been weird.
Yeah, very strange.
Maybe Sony would have stepped in a bit like the Nintendo, sort of like company, Maybe they would have been like, where are the people to do this? Or maybe Sega would have done it. But not with fucking Alex Kidd. Not with Alex Kidd. There's a reason we're not seeing an Alex Kidd open up theme parks in Japan. There's a reason we're not seeing that. All right, is that it for this podcast?
That's it for this podcast.
What was it? What was it? Coleco's...
Leave the leather boot.
Leave the leather boot? Is he talk? Is he like a Monopoly little guy? A little boot from Monopoly?
Yeah, he
talks?
He looks kind of like the Bill on Capitol Hill, but add a boot bottom to it.
What was your combination of two different... you combined Rocky the Rodent and another one about a year ago?
I think I said Rocky Possum.
Rocky Possum. You combine
Awesome Possum and Rocky the Rodent. Rocky Possum.
You got two bad ones out of the way there. All right. Well, that's it for the podcast. This wasn't a total disaster.
No, it was fine. It was good. It's good stuff.
It's good shit. It's good shit.
Good shit.
Yeah, we didn't talk about WWE Network being rolled up into the NBC Peacock Network, which is the worst thing, or Peacock streaming service, because I don't give a shit about wrestling anymore, basically.
Yeah, that's why we didn't do it, because we don't care.
But I'm still kind of tempted to... maybe I'm not, because the Royal Rumble has probably happened already, or is happening. Are they doing the Royal Rumble? Is it around now? Or are they canceling it?
Should be soon.
Maybe they don't want 30 people breathing on each other in the ring?
Yeah, maybe not.
Is the Royal Rumble happening? I gotta look that up. Royal Rumble.
Yeah, it is. I saw like some sort of like announcing about it or something.
But there's just no excitement to watch this stuff without fans.
Yeah.
Like, half the excitement was seeing AJ Styles come out, what was that, 3 years ago already, or 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah, the
ago.
Rumble in particular is going to be real weird without, like, fan reaction.
Yes!
Yeah.
They'll try to pump it in, they do the little people watching from their webcam. Mm-hmm. It's not the same thing. It's not. There is a Royal Rumble. They're going to trot out Goldberg to fight Drew McIntyre. I'm so glad I'm not watching this shit. I'm so fucking glad.
Yeah, that's bad, man.
Move on. Goldberg's like 54 years old. Move on. He didn't put on good matches when he was 35 years old. Or 30 years old. Like, move on.
Yeah.
Except DDP dragged a good match from him. DDP can drag a good match from anything. Because DDP's a man.
Yeah. No, DDP can drag a good match out of a mop.
All right. That's it for this podcast. We're done. We'll see you later. Oh, by the way, I'm still cold. 2 weeks without heat. Over 2 weeks. I got to get a guy out here. I'll see you later.